All right, I want to give you a little bit of a preview of the book report. Just a tiny preview here in this first segment.
I like previews. Big fan of watching those.
Because the book that I read that we'll do the book report on is Black Out Loud, The Revolutionary History of Black Comedy from Vaudeville to 90s Sitcoms. Jeff Bennett is the author of that, and I do believe it came out last year. It has a 2025 date on it. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I can't wait to dive more into this with you guys here at 12:15 today. But as I'm doom scrolling yesterday, wasting a lot of brain cells, wasting a lot of time yesterday, I came across this one thing I had never seen before. And I wanted to share it with you guys because I am not a big Saturday Night Live watcher. I probably can count on both hands the number of episodes I've watched the last 15 years.
Okay.
I just don't do it. And I'll hear maybe of someone that I've heard of or enjoy hosting, and maybe we'll turn on for the monologue, or even, man, I don't even turn it on if there's a musical guest that I'll go, oh my gosh, that musical guest, let me check that out. It never runs across my mind to watch Saturday Night Live unless I remember once being on the road, we're in a hotel room, and Lizzo was the host. And I'm not even a huge Lizzo fan, but there was nothing else going on. We're in a hotel room. We turn it on and enjoyed the episode. She was fine. Okay. It was fun. So every now and then I'll check it out, and you get a couple of sketches that'll make you chuckle, or the news update that'll make you chuckle, and all right, you call it a day. Well, I had heard this about a certain comic that I really do enjoy, but I never watched the monologue where it happened, and that's one Martin Lawrence, because we all know that his show that was on Fox is one of my favorite shows of all time. But I will say this about him. I am not the biggest fan of his stand-up. I love his show. When he was the host of Def Comedy Jam, I thought he was squarely in his element. I enjoyed some of his movies. But his actual stand-up to me sometimes, I don't know, it just misses the mark for me personally. And he was the host of Saturday Night Live one time and one time only, because he actually got banned. Well, I want to play for you what actually happened on the show on Saturday Night Live when he's hosting.
What was his date?
I do believe it was back in 1994, I want to say. It's either 93 or 94.
Okay, that's when I had to have seen it, because I used to be, back when I was in high school, I watched Saturday Night Live every single week.
All right, so Martin Lawrence comes out.
I don't remember this.
February 19,
94. 94, okay. So he comes out. It's about a six-minute long monologue. So he's about 4 minutes into his monologue, and I have this here tip sheet. About 4 minutes into his monologue when this happens.
Something else concerns me, and it hurts. See, I'm single. I'm a single man. I don't have nobody. I'm looking for somebody. But I'm meeting a lot of women out there, and you got some beautiful women. But you got something out there that I got to say something. Some of you are not washing your ass properly.
At this point in his monologue, Martin begins a commentary on what he considers the decline in standards of feminine hygiene in this country. Although we at Saturday Night Live take no stand on this issue one way or the other, network policy prevents us from rebroadcasting this portion of his remarks. In summary, Martin feels, or felt at the time, that the failure of many young women to bathe thoroughly is a serious problem that demands our attention. He explores this problem, citing numerous examples from his personal experience, and ends by proposing several imaginative solutions. It was a frank and lively presentation, and nearly cost us all our jobs. We now return to the conclusion of Martin's monologue.
Well, look here, y'all. We got a great show for you tonight, because I'm here.
Yeah, they couldn't air it.
They could not air it because it's pretty out there.
It's vulgar, apparently, right?
It is. Now, I don't know why, but yesterday, the entirety of his monologue came out.
Yesterday it did?
It's probably been out there. It's the first time I've ever seen it.
Man, that's wild.
And I was really contemplating on if we should play it, because it's not, he doesn't say any words that you can't say. It's just how he kind of phrased everything about the ladies and the hygiene problem.
Right, yeah.
That was pretty out there. And I've been wrestling back and forth. Like, I don't know exactly what to beep, what to, okay, this is inappropriate. And I'm surprised with Saturday Night Live, with some of the things that I've heard on this program, that they felt that that portion of his monologue was just so bad that they couldn't air it. It feels like, and again, I am not a P1 of Saturday Night Live, but if I've turned it on, and especially like some of the jokes on the news update or anything like that, feels like it's way worse than some of the things that he said directly in his monologue.
I think apparently from just looking at this real quick, it sounds like he went off script.
He definitely went off script.
Right. And so Lorne Michaels, when that type of thing happens, like, no, we don't do that here. So even if it wasn't horrible and they weren't going to get fined by the FCC.
Yeah.
I can see Lorne shutting that down in a hurry and being like, no, that's not what we approved. Especially if they went into dress and they ran through dress and then he came out live and did something completely different.
And you could definitely tell like a light bulb was over his head at that moment, because right. He had already been up there for 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes. And then this light bulb comes on and he starts, you know, you're watching your, you know what. And then he just kind of goes off. You guys want to hear just a little bit of it?
It must be something, because it says the monologue generated over 200 viewer complaints and outraged NBC executives.
All right, everyone, let's just be cautious. And if there's something that we feel that needs to go, we'll go and we'll stop it, okay? Let's just think about it.
This is Donnie's decision. I'm going to the restroom.
No, it's just, I just saw it and went, okay, well, let's see how this goes. So this is the first time I'd ever seen this. I remember hearing that he had been banned from hosting Saturday Night Live.
Mid-90s, you could get away with certain things that you can't get away with today, but also vice versa.
Sure. All right. Oh, no. Just listen to a little, and then we can decide when we need to shut this down. This is Martin Lawrence when he hosted Saturday Night Live in 1994. Right. They cut it off at this particular moment in his monologue because he did go off script. And first time I ever saw it yesterday. So let's check it out.
I got to say something. Some of you are not washing your ass properly. Okay, don't get me wrong. Not all. Some of you. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry. Because, listen. Now, I don't know what it is that a woman got to do to keep up the hygiene on the body. I know I'm watching douche commercials on television. And I'm wondering if some of you are reading the instructions. I don't think so. You know? Because I'm getting with some of the ladies smelling odors going, wait a minute. Girl, smell this. This you. Smell yourself, girl. Smell yourself. I'll tell a woman in a minute.
We cutting it off? Are we good?
I think it's at that phrase is probably as far as we need to go.
Yeah. The idea. You think so?
I could see why maybe in 94, even at late night on TV on a Saturday, they're like, maybe a little too far. A little too far.
It's 10:30 at night, though.
I'm telling you, man, it's if you came out and did your monologue in dress and it was completely different than when you did it live, they would drop that in a hurry.
There's also something about saying those words, but also referencing a specific body part and actually referencing the body part.
And in this particular, of course, we are an audio medium and we can't see it. He's using hand gestures.
Okay. Not helping.
I was about to ask.
He's using hand gestures.
Like, all that. You can't do that.
He does mention a stick up. Yeah. Put it in a particular place. But again, he didn't say the words, but it was just, I guess, a decision of NBC and Saturday Night Live. Again, I think you're right, Matt. It was more of, dude, this is not what we rehearsed. You're off script, leaning towards controversial, so let's just cut it. And I would love to know how many times that they've done that. How many times has anyone who's hosted Saturday Night Live came out and just kind of went off script where they had to cut a part of this monologue and make that statement and then come back.
Man,
That person
before.
Is not even allowed to host anymore. They showed another one. Of course, as you get in your algorithm and you start scrolling, there was another monologue that they showed from Saturday Night Live, and it was Rick Moranis. He didn't say one word. He came out there dancing, and then he grabbed the guitar. He started playing that. He started playing the saxophone. He ran over to the camera and started operating the camera that they showed, and came down and started ironing the pants of John Lovitz. Like, it was such a different tale from Martin's to Rick Moranis, and everyone's going nuts, and he did not say one word in his monologue.
Yeah, it's the control thing. And then, like, I remember when Sinead O'Connor was on there. Musical guests have had where they never coming back. Rage Against the Machine, because they did like Upside Down American Flags or whatever, and Sinead O'Connor ripped up a picture of the Pope,
right?
And that was a huge deal. And in Dress, when they're going through that, they didn't do those things. And so then when you get on the live show, I mean, there's a lot of control behind that show. I mean, it is sketch comedy where it's, of course, they allow for some improv, but at the same time, when they go through Dress, I mean, they cut things out that they thought were going to work. And they'll cut stuff out, and then sometimes, well, we still believe in this one, and it got horrible reaction at Dress, and then live, oh my God, it was the greatest sketch of all time.
Yeah, so. Damon Wayans, of course, of the Wayans family and in Living Color, was an actual member, cast member of Saturday Night Live. But he was very frustrated because he's not getting any roles written for him, and he just felt like it wasn't going his way. So there was a sketch where he was supposed to be a cop and not really. I think he had one line in the whole entire sketch, but he turned it into a gay cop off script, had no clue that he was going to do it. And he immediately got fired.
Yeah.
Because it was almost the men on film character that you see on In Living Color is what he did on Saturday Night Live. Because he said, man, he had all these ideas, but they never adopted any of those for his character there on Saturday Night Live. So I can't remember exactly how long he was on the show, but that's another one that if you go off script and you do something that's not in dress rehearsal, then you are out of there. And he got fired immediately when he did that.
Yeah, and there's been a couple incidents of that nature that people have not been invited back. But, man, that Martin Lawrence thing, that's just wild, man. I mean, that is to go completely off your own from what you're like, you know, because they rehearse, they get there for a week, they sit down, they write stuff like, hey, what do you think is funny and blah, blah. And they write, of course, sketches for ideas that fit whomever the guest is and see what they're comfortable with. And then they go through rehearsals. And then
is the monologue just mainly them? Are they doing that on their own?
Yeah, usually a cast, maybe one or two cast members will come out if they're involved, but a lot of times it's just the guest.
No, are they writing that? Is someone writing it for them? It's part of the team.
I think they have the team help them along with it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the comic. Is it a comic who normally writes their own stuff? A lot of comics have a team that they work with that is helping them write jokes, and then they'll throw in some things as well and be like, oh, well, you can't do that or do this. Yeah.
It's also a different style than stand-up, too. Like, doing that monologue isn't exactly doing a five-minute set either.
He went Def Comedy Jam at Saturday Night Live, and those two worlds just couldn't collide back in 1994. You do that on the Def Comedy Jam stage, and you have people standing up, marching up and down the aisles, running.
You put it on your reel at the end, of the Hall of Fame.
That's not going at Saturday Night Live. So.
Yeah, and you just, man, the hand gestures as well. There's just no way. You can't do that.
He was all over the place. And then after he was done with his monologue, he ripped his shirt off and he was kind of flexing on stage. It's kind of wild. So they said, you know what, Martin, you're one and done. We are not having you host Saturday Night
Will
Live
Smith
ever
is like,
again.
Great, now I got to make another Bad Boys.
Right.
I got you.
All right. So that's just a little preview of the Black Out Loud book that I read. We'll have a book report today at 12:15.
But right now, it is time for our new segment called Book Report.
Yeah, we know we are working with the book bitch who reads a lot. So Travis and I said, you know what, let's get in on this a bit. And we have started with a book a quarter. I know Junior Miller from the award-winning Musers, he reads a book a month and he does a book report on that. I'll have to definitely work my way up towards that if that's something that I want to do. So we've given ourselves 3 months to read a book and we'll present it. Well, the one book that was suggested to me is called Black Out Loud The Revolutionary History of Black Comedy from Vaudeville to 90s Sitcoms. It's by Jeff Bennett. And I believe it came out in 2025.
Okay. So relatively new.
Yes. So just reading this and know how I feel about comedy in general. I was very interested in this. So we tackled it and I finished with it. And I really, truly enjoyed this book. Now, how they laid this out, the book is 20 chapters and each chapter focuses on a particular person or a particular show.
Okay.
And it starts with a few names that I'd never heard of before. And then it winds up talking about a few different shows. Well, actually, six different shows in the last chapters. A Different World, In Living Color, Family Matters, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Martin Lawrence gets his own chapter, and then Living Single and Chappelle Show. That's how it ends with this book, just dedicating pages to those particular shows. And then it starts with the minstrelsy and the minstrel vaudeville type of era that I didn't know anything about. So just to get to know some of the names that started that and some of the first few black people who were basically stars in that type of area and that type of black comedy was kind of fascinating to read about. Also, Billy Kersands is chapter one, and he kind of started the whole thing as far as minstrel shows and how they became pretty popular. And it is kind of funny that in the 1800s and early 1900s, that there are a lot of white people who wouldn't be caught dead sitting next to a black person in a restaurant or a theater or at a comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about performing on stage, that's all they wanted to know about, the antics, or I guess the ways of the black person in America.
Which was a lot of white people in blackface.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot, and I mean a lot, back of then, well-known white performers performed in blackface because that's the minstrel shows.
Right, that's what it was.
Right, that's what it was. And I guess it was to hide the fact that they are white. They're pretending to be black on stage, but they are white actors. So just getting to learn some of those names and how that went and how even back in those days where you had some of the prominent names that were trying to make changes for black people back then were almost conflicted as far as that comedy goes, because every single stereotype you can think of was performed at these minstrel shows by even black actors who were performed in blackface. But it was to get a rise and a laugh out of this white audience.
Right.
And even trying to say, all right, this is not cool. Black people shouldn't be portrayed in that way. But the only way they could become popular or star or get money was to act in that way. So you have some of those names that were in the minstrel show era, Billy Kersands. And basically, Bert Williams was probably known as the first black performing star that made his name as far as going, doing and performing these minstrel shows, not only around the United States, but around the world, getting popular. And some of the amounts of money that they would make back in those days, and they start talking about the equivalent to what that is now, dude, those dudes were getting paid. But it was one in a Pigmeat Markham, and I did mention him, I think it was last week, earlier this week. When we talked mm-hmm. about him, was probably one of the first black performers who stopped doing blackface, because he had a couple of young black men come backstage before a show and kind of challenged him to say, why do we even need this makeup? And They called it burnt cork at that time.
Burnt
the,
cork?
The, yes. The,
I've never heard
putting
that.
The blackface on. And they were like, okay, why are you doing this? And it's like, okay, because sometimes these performers would get out there and they're every single stereotype that's out there, they're performing and they have these artists laugh, and it almost made them kind of sad, but the blackface kind of hit them, and it was kind of a barrier from them knowing they probably shouldn't do that.
Right.
And like people laughing at them, but it just gave them the confidence to go out there and do it and perform. And when they would take it off, they would feel pretty bad about it. But then, you know, they're getting paid, and then they'll just put the makeup back on. So they just went to him and said, hey, man, why don't you just try and do it without it? And he was one of the first black performers to go out and do that. But I want to kind of focus on just a few people. Because when you talk about the minstrel shows, and even if you want to throw vaudeville in there if you want to, if you went up there as far as a comic goes, you weren't just telling jokes. You were singing, you were dancing, you were doing all this stereotype stuff, step and fetch it. There's a guy that they focus on. He was chapter three in this, and he was pretty well known. I had heard of him before. When you start, after the first couple of chapters, they focused on Step and Fetch It, Hattie McDaniel, Amos and Andy, and those are all the names that I had heard before. Dick Gregory is a name that's known, but I don't think people understand and realize what he did for current comedy that's out there right now. Because again, on those minstrel shows, you are singing, you are dancing, you are telling jokes. A lot of your comedy bits are built around song and dance. And the physical aspect of it, if it's because Step and Fetch It was out there and he was kind of portraying the lazy black man, and the white audiences just absolutely love that. So he leaned all into that. And so Dick Gregory was one of the first ones that said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to sit down and tell jokes. I'm not going to dance. I'm not going to sing. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to sit down and tell jokes. And that was a difference maker in comedy. And how that turned from them performing on stage, just telling jokes. He was huge. And I don't think I realized the impact of Dick Gregory and how every single comedian from Richard Pryor, Red Fox, well, not after Red Fox, but Flip Wilson and Bill Cosby and Richard Pryor and all those guys pretty much have Dick Gregory to think. It probably would have happened at some point, but he was the one that sat in front of white audiences and just sat there and told jokes. And he was accepted. And they didn't think that was going to happen. Now, I think the longest chapter in this book is dedicated to Bill Cosby. And I love reading the very humble beginnings of a lot of these comics who felt like they were really bored in school, so their grades reflected that. And actually, they're smart, but they're just bored, or they just want to make people laugh and all that. So that's a common thread for pretty much every single comedian that they highlighted in this, as far as their trials and tribulations, as far as going through school, dropping out, trying to do this. Bill Cosby was like a 23-year-old freshman in college because of him dropping out of school and him trying to make it and, you know, in the clubs and doing comedy. And another, and I'm going to skip around here a bit, but the Richard Pryor that we know now was a Bill Cosby. He wanted to be Bill Cosby. So Richard Pryor first was out doing clean comedy just like Bill Cosby. And they were like, you know what, man, you might want to try and find your voice. There's right. one Bill Cosby. Let's see what you can do something else. And then realize, all right, well, I'm going to start telling my truth. And he did. And he became the monster that he is right now. I think if you ask a lot of people, all right, who's the greatest comedian out there that's ever done it? Richard Pryor is going to be on the top of everyone's list. But it's a very interesting chapter about him and all the things that he had to go through to try to get to where he was. Because there were a lot of civil rights issues going on, and Dick Gregory addressed them head on. Bill Cosby didn't, because Bill Cosby was like, I'm trying to make comedy for everyone and trying to get ahead and trying to make my name on this circuit and not get involved really with the racial sort of side of this thing. And that got him a little bit further than Dick Gregory, because Dick Gregory was there, dog. He was there. And then all of a sudden he realized that black people were being done wrong, and he focused all of his attention on that, and that kind of took him out. Like, that dude was arrested hundreds of times. Like, he was in the movement, and Cosby wasn't.
Yeah.
So, but you have Richard Pryor trying to be Bill Cosby, and then that opened the door for Eddie Murphy and all those guys. They had one goal back in those days, and that just wasn't a black comedian. That was any comedian out there, to get on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and get called to the couch. That's all they wanted, because that is the difference from you making it and not making it. That just wasn't a black comedian thing. That was a comedian thing. And so you had Richard Pryor, of course, called over there several times, and Bill Cosby and Red Fox. That's a really good chapter also. And I know we don't have a ton of time, but that one, that dude went through a ringer to try and be this comedian, and he handled money so poorly because of the way he was brought up that even when he made it, that dude had everything taken away from him because he never paid Uncle Sam. Man. And I had to try and find the footage of the helicopter footage of them taking away everything he has. He's in his driveway in his underwear bitching because they're inside of his home taking everything that he earned. And his rise was so slow that when he made it, he started making those comedy albums. Of course, he got the show, and his rise was really, really fast. But man, it came crashing down because that dude just did not want to pay Uncle Sam at all.
Man.
And when he finally got back to, okay, this is Red Fox, he got in that movie with Harlem Nights with Eddie Murphy. He wrote that part specifically for him. And then, okay, he's going to be back. They have a show for him that comes out, and it's him and Della Reese because of the chemistry they had on the movie. And like six episodes in, he has a heart attack and dies. And that's it for that show when he was trying to get back to the riches that he had. Man, it's a great look at how this has evolved and all the pressures that these black comedians have to try and be successful, but still try and keep, it may be wrong to say, but their blackness, because it feels like there are times you may have to sell a little bit in order to be where you are, to make it. And you can try and flip it. And once you get the platform, try to do it for good. That's what Dick Gregory did. But a lot of these guys were like, no, I'm here. I'm going to keep doing this because this money is great.
Yeah.
And keep continually, I don't want to say turning their back on the race, but feeding into the stereotypes of what everyone thinks about us for profit. And that's why Chappelle left, because the chapter on him was, man, he's making this money, $50 million. And I think we all know the story. He was doing the one sketch, and the sketch that he did that made him leave, he was in blackface. And he was dancing almost like, I don't know if it's the Step and Fetch It character or whatever, but he was doing that, and he felt that there was one white man that was laughing a little too hard, a little too long, laughing at him, and he walked away. And I think black comedians have been dealing with that forever. It's been dealt with forever. Dude, I think if you have any interest in black comedy or just some of the issues that you have to get to try and be a star and try and get on top, and especially at a time where a lot of people did not look at you as a whole person, or you're definitely beneath them, but you're still trying to fight that battle to get there, highly recommend reading this. It's only a few days, maybe 3 or 4 days, and I was done with this, man. I couldn't hardly put it down, especially some of those chapters
okay.
on Hattie McDaniel, which is a really good one, Moms Mabley, being a female trying to make it in this business, to Eddie Murphy and Bill Cosby and Red Fox and some of the names that we do know. So it's Black Out Loud, the revolutionary history of black comedy from vaudeville to 90s sitcoms. I wish I had more hands so I can give that book 4 thumbs up.
So 5 stars out of 5 then?
Yes, 5 stars out of 5. Okay. Now I'm trying to see which book I'm going to read next. I think that the Arsenio Hall book, his memoir, is going to be in the lead. I got another recommendation that I'm going to look into, but that might not be the next one. I think that Arsenio Hall book may be it.